God is with us.
And also with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, Lord.
Tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to listen to Jesus, but the Pharisees and the scribes began to complain, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So to them, Jesus addressed this parable. A man had two sons, and the younger son said to his father, "Father, give me the share of your estate that should come to me." So the father divided the property between them. After a few days, the younger son collected all his belongings and set off to a distant country, where he squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation. When he had freely spent everything, a severe famine struck the country, and he found himself in dire need. So he hired himself out to one of the local citizens, who sent him to his farm to tend the swine. And he longed to eat his fill of the pods on which the swine fed, but nobody gave him any. Coming to his senses, he thought, "How many of my father's hired workers have more than enough food to eat? But here I am, dying from hunger. I shall get up and go to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as you would treat one of your hired workers.'" So he got up and he ventured back to his father. While he was still a long way off, his father caught sight of him and was filled with compassion. He ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son." But his father ordered his servants, "Quickly, bring the finest robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Take the fatted calf and slaughter it. Then let us celebrate with a feast, because this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and now has been found." Then the celebration began. Now the older son had been out in the field, and on his way back, as he neared the house, he heard the sound of music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked what this might mean. The servant said to him, "Your brother has returned, and your father has slaughtered the fatted calf, because he has him back, safe and sound." The older brother became angry, and when he refused to enter the house, his father came out and pleaded with him. He said to his father in reply, "Look, all these years I served you, and not once did I disobey your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to feast on with my friends. But when your son returns, who swallowed up your property with prostitutes, for him you slaughter the fatted calf." His father said to him, "My son, you are here with me always. Everything I have is yours. But now we must celebrate and rejoice, because your brother was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and he has been found." This is the good news of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
I might come in a little closer.
First of all, thank you for the invitation to be with you today. Secondly, the hymn today that we opened up with was perfect, about holy wisdom, be with us on our journey, because that's what I want to talk about today. I pulled out my commentaries take another look at this very familiar reading that I remember, and I know you all do too. There's a gentleman named William Barclay, who's a long-respected commentator on the Gospels. He called the story of the prodigal son the greatest story, short story in the world. He said it really wasn't named very well. Shouldn't be the prodigal, about the prodigal son. It should be about the loving father. So that was interesting. But as I went through it, I remembered that Jesus was talking to the Pharisees, who had made the comment about, look at this man who dines with sinners, and so forth. So we've all heard this story many times in our life. Dick said, you know, perhaps we can bring a fresh perspective. Well, I've been thinking about this. It's been percolating for some time. It's an iconic lesson in what God's unconditional love and the forgiveness that it inspires looks like, what it behaves like. And while it's about divine love, Jesus holds it up for human imitation. Remember, the religious leaders of the time who reportedly complained about Jesus, a rabbi, was again cavorting with sinners and even dining with them. As I said, the reading's been percolating in my mind. What kept stirring my curiosity was the journey the younger brother took. Why did he leave in such haste? How long was he away? What happened on his journey? Who did he meet along the way? How did they shape his life for the better or worse? Jesus said the young man squandered his inheritance in a life of dissipation. How is that? What did that look like? I wondered. And then I asked, what is my inheritance? I think it could be perhaps the very gift of my life. That's my inheritance upon birth. And every day, a new day begins. Every morning of our journey, we awaken to that gift again. The characters in the story, both sons and father, have followed different life paths. And every person in this room so far has also traveled a unique path, a unique journey. Those of you who are parents, think about the paths your children have taken. How similar or dissimilar are they? All of us, most of us, have siblings. Think about your siblings. How similar or dissimilar are you from each other? I'm one of three. There's 13 years in the span between us, three boys. And my mother often said, I have no idea how the three of you came out of the same womb. Think about your own life journey, because I've been thinking about that. How smooth has it been? How well did it follow whatever master plan you had for your life? I didn't have a master plan, and I often envied those who knew what they wanted and went for it. But even for people like that, the plan was often challenged, if not derailed, by the unforeseen. An event, a person, an emotion, an opportunity, a tragedy, knocks us off track, and we move in a new direction. Although we start from the same home base, each of us forges our own unique path, learning as we go. In the first third of life, we may be guided by an array of adults in various roles. Likely all of us here were baptized into a faith community and tradition that shaped us. For me, I would add, shaped me for better and for worse. In adulthood, we set sail on our own adventures. I identified with the younger son's impetuous departure from family and home. I did just that at age 18. One of those older adults in my life I just mentioned had a huge impact on that decision. The woman's name was Andrea, Sister Andrea. We called her Sister Guidance. She was the guidance counselor in the school. That's the nuns all got the name, the role that they were playing in. There's Sister Biology, Sister History, so forth. Both my parents were both high school graduates. Mom was a homemaker, which is no small job, and Dad was an appliance repairman. I mention that because they didn't weren't in a position to advise me about college. They financed my education, Catholic education, up through the end of high school. And then it was clear, as it was to my brothers, I'm on my own now, right? So Andrea had the experience my mother didn't have. She asked me what my plans were for college. I had none. I didn't have an answer. This is senior year. She recognized the potential in me, and she said, well, we better get busy and fill out some applications. And I knew that I was expected to finance further education, and I didn't know how I was going to do that. So I followed Andrea's lead. My journey that followed that took a most unexpected turn when I was awarded 3 scholarships.
Wow.
One was a full ride and was designated for residents of Colorado, where I grew up, attending the Catholic University of America. They had the going before Ohio State did. So I left my homeland in Denver, my family, and headed 1,600 miles east to a place I had never been before. My parents drove me there one hot August. You don't want to be in D.C. in late August. None of us had ever been east of Denver. One nun changed the trajectory of my life in a big way. And I wish that I had had the opportunity to say thank you, but I didn't realize it, you know, until later on. You can see why I identified with the younger son going far away from home. A life intersection, I call it, is how I describe coming to a place in time where you're presented with competing options and you have to make a choice. Things happen, circumstances incline, people advise or influence, past experience informs you, a decision has to be made to move forward. Remember Dorothy at the junction in the yellow brick road? Like we often do, she consulted with trusted advisors and off they went. How many times did she second-guess that decision along the path? With each new challenge, was it the right path? Did I make the right choice? At our intersections, we don't know for sure. We do our best, make a choice with what we know or think we know, and move forward with faith. In what ways might the journey of the younger son be like Dorothy's until he concluded there was no place like home? Our life journey is full of these intersections. Should I play football or run track or join the marching band? Go to college or train to take over the family business? Is this the person I should marry? I can't stay in this marriage, can I? Is it time to leave this job? Should we move across country? Our life journey is comprised of one choice or event after another. The decisions shape how we grow and who we become as we journey back home to our Maker. And I was curious about what were those decisions, what were those choices the young man had on his journey. Sometimes the driving forces are subconscious. Sometimes we're broadsided, like when a spouse says, I want a divorce, or the boss says, your job has been unfortunately eliminated. I regret to inform you that your blood test results show. As I age and reminisce, I experience both gratitude and sadness, pride and regret about my life path. Life's a messy adventure. When it's good, we may thank God. When it's bad, we wonder, where is God in this? When the father's youngest son suddenly took off and went far away, there was no way to communicate easily back then, no texting, no email. I speculated about how the father experienced concern, loss, perhaps anxiety, wondering what his son was doing. Was he all right? Is he ever coming back to me? I wondered if God does that. Does she worry about me like my mother did? These are the emotions of love, so if God is love, I imagine the answer is yes. The message I derived from the parable is that God is with us all the way. Do we not believe in freedom of conscience? Will Mark make good choices? God might be asking. I imagine God covering his face with concern when I didn't make good choices. But maybe not. Maybe he, she, them could see there was a lesson to be learned in bad choices, Can a misdirected choice be redeemed later? Sister Andre was a heavy hitter on my journey. Another big influencer came into my life stage when I entered the seminary at age 24, a fellow seminarian from Ohio. His name was Michael. I came to be at Mount St. Paul Novitiate in New Jersey because I concluded it was the best way to resolve a huge spiritual contradiction in my life caused by the dissonance between a church that taught me about God's unconditional love and a church that lived a very conditional love, telling me that the body I was born into was somehow intrinsically disordered. I thought I could live an honorable life and not deal with that inner conflict. Not the best motive for going to seminary, but I'm not the first. But when I got there, I wasn't off the hook. I fell in love for the first time in my life with Michael. For the first time, I allowed myself to be physically and intimately held and touched and loved in a way no one had loved me before other than my own parents. Remember, I was 24. It was a powerful infusion of grace in the most ironic of places. I had felt so much judgment up to that point, but in this intersection of my life, I felt more alive than ever, and I thought, this cannot possibly be sinful. This love I feel is of God. It cannot be a trap. I am not disordered. The church's teaching is, kind of like when Paul was knocked off his horse, the blinders came off of me. But it was very problematic, as you can imagine. For a time, I bifurcated between a relationship I craved and a solemn commitment to religious life, celibate religious life, that awaited. So, Sister Andrea, Michael. Talking about people who had a big impact on my life journey and took me in ways that I never thought I would. When I went to seminary, I thought I was going to be ordained. I didn't expect to fall in love. I wanted to fall in love before I got there. It just didn't happen. I think it's because my defenses were down that it happened. But that's when grace decided to take hold. The third person I want to talk about is Joseph. Father Joseph. Father Joseph Murphy. He was my spiritual advisor. He was a young Jesuit, not a member of my community. He listened to me work through contradictions and feelings and confusion in a series of private conversations in the next year of my seminary life in the safety of his office. I never once felt judged by him. He had a lot of motive to try and talk me into religious life. That's what I'd come for. But he never did. He just listened. Is that not grace? Fairly remarkable. I regard this as another indicator that someone was looking after me. After 9 months, he said to me one day, "Mark, the time has come for you to choose your next path." Back to Dorothy. You can't continue to love Michael and continue to have the Paulus Fathers support you in formation. It's not fair to Michael, who had left 9 months earlier, or the Paulus, or you. You need to make a choice. So I entered into prayer one night in a darkened chapel. It was just me and Jesus, because there was the sanctuary candle. And I pleaded with God for direction. What do you want me to do with my life? My inheritance. This response came to me clear as a bell. "Mark, my son, I don't care what you do. I don't care if you're a priest, a politician, a plumber, or a policeman. It's all P's. All I care about is how well you love while you're doing whatever." That didn't answer my question, but it did give a very different context for the question. I was 24 and in my first serious relationship. I had a lot of catching up to do. Grace led me to Michael, disrupting my master plan once again. I decided to follow him from New Jersey to a place I once again had never been to, Columbus, Ohio. And the rest is history. The takeaway God our Father, God our Creator, God our Mother is the Alpha and the Omega of our life. The Maker of heaven and earth is by our side, loving us from beginning to end, no matter the twists or turns our journey takes, takes us back to home. The divine spark that was with us when we were born travels with us. My brother Rick died 6 months ago after a long battle with Alzheimer's. He was 10 years older than I. In his wandering stage, his wife of 50 years would ask him, he'd go to the front door, "Rick, where are you going?" I was there many times when this happened. He responded with some version of, "I'm going home." A week before he passed, he fell. Teresa, age 78, struggled so hard to pick him up. Once on their feet, she said, "Ricky, I can't keep doing this. What are we going to do?" And Rick said, "Let's go home." She said, "I can't go home with you, honey. You go, and I'll catch up with you. The kids need me right now." A week later, Rick left and ended his earthly journey. Like the ending of a book, I wrote his obituary and saw how all the episodes of his journey congealed to make his life story whole. Another word for that is holy. As I think about his journey, my own messy journey, I draw consolation in the telling of the parable of the prodigal son. No matter how our journey unfolds, with its successes and blunders, happy and sad endings, God is there with us. Our divine source, the Father in this story, has accompanied us all along and will embrace us with a robe of honor when we return home. This belief echoes throughout the scriptures. Jeremiah 1, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you." Isaiah 43, "Do not be afraid, because I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine." Hebrews 13, "Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you." John 10, "He calls his own sheep by name and leads them." And Luke 15, "Today, everything I have is yours." Each day is a new beginning with new choices to make. Remember the wisdom I was given in that chapel some 40 years ago? Whatever you do today, do it in a loving way. In this parable, we see that forgiveness and acceptance are acts of love. With such love as our compass, as we travel, when we come to the end of our journey, as my brother did, it should not be with regret over a squandered inheritance. I'm reading a book by a gentleman named Wendell Berry. It's called The Unsettling of America. I'm going to end with words from that book. "And the world cannot be discovered by a journey of miles, no matter how long, but only by a spiritual journey, a journey of 1 inch, very arduous and humbling and joyful, by which we arrive at the ground of our feet and finally learn to be home."